I could probably overcome it anyhow. Pardon? My name is Joel Collin, and I volunteered a couple hours ago to say a few words regarding this from my own personal experience. The take home is you should know the name and phone number of a criminal attorney. And this is from my experience. A few years ago, and I'll preface this by saying that prior to this incident, the only interaction I ever had with the police was totally positive. I'd had a couple of speeding tickets over my lifetime. I'm now 72. And prior to that, the last interaction was probably 30 years prior for a speeding ticket. I don't know, going 45 and a 35, coming out of an airport in Cincinnati. I was flying back to Atlanta from Dubai. It's a 16-hour flight. Arrived at 6:30 in the morning. I hadn't had any sleep on the plane, so I was without sleep for about 30 hours. I arrived in. They swiped my passport and escorted me out of the line into a little room. Had about 10 seats and a front desk, kind of like this. And they were questioning people, and I figured, I travel a lot, so I figured probably they were asking me questions. I've been in and out of the United Arab Republic and Israel and a lot of crazy places. And they were questioning some young woman who was from Argentina. I know they were trying to determine whether she was coming as a tourist or whether she was going to come and not go back. And I could tell her story was a little inconsistent. They ended up letting her go. And I finally said, you know, could you tell me why I'm here? And they said, well, we don't know yet. So they said, but there's a hold on you. So I waited and waited. And finally, they came in, or I think they did tell me that I was in the NCIC or NCIS, National Criminal. I recognized it, yeah. So finally, after an hour of sitting there, and I couldn't use my cell phone, I went to use it, and they said, oh, we find out what it is. I said, what is it? And they said, there's a warrant out for your arrest, felony identity fraud. I'm like, what? I said, yeah, it's got to be something. So, finally, and then after that, almost everything that they told me was wrong. I'll try to keep this short. They said, you'll be picked up by the Sandy Springs police, taken to a judge, you know, you can post bail. Well, I wasn't picked up by the Sandy Springs police. They did let me recheck my bags. And fortunately, I had the presence of mind. One, I had a calling card with an 800 number. I guess from movies, I'm thinking one card with a payphone. If I've got an 800 number, I can call, and I grab medications. I have a kidney transplant, and it's critical I take my medication twice a day. And I grab that. So a city policeman came. They took me out through a side door. I was on the tarmac where all the planes are. Blistering noise. Sat there in a car for 40 minutes at least. And the policeman keeps jiggling with the keyboard. Refused to tell me anything. Finally, I said, and I know they hear all the time, you know, this is a mistake. So I said, let me just verify something. Let me give me my social security number, date of birth, my name, and everything else. All checks out. He says, is there anything else in there that it could possibly, you know, information you can tell me? And he said, well, it's got the name Margot. All of a sudden, I had opened 4 accounts, 2 checking and 2 savings accounts with a bank. I won't say the name right now. To get AirTran points years ago. They had some big promotion. I had a girlfriend. You had to open a CD, and they had all that. So I had 4 accounts. And after we got the thing and everything else, I closed them. Sometime much later, I go down to my mailbox. I live in a condo. There's a little gazebo. It's got locked mailboxes. I live by myself. So I open the mail, I take the mail out, and I open the mail. And there was a statement from the bank, $3,000 in it. And I said, man, I thought I closed all those accounts. So I go over to the bank, and I said, is this account still open? And they say, and I go check. And I say, yeah. I said, well, I thought I closed it. Close it. without asking, I take out my driver's license, I put it down. And a little girl, she fiddles and fiddles with it. And they come back and they say, well, what's your relationship to Margo? I said, Margo? I said, let me see that. I said, geez, I've gotten her mail before. Because this woman's last name is similar to mine. And the it was addressed wrong. And I had gotten mail from her before. I said, oh, I've gotten her mail. Let me have the envelope, you know, the thing, I'll give it to her. They said, no, we'll take care of it. I forgot about it. This is months later. So I figured it has to have something to do with that. So the policeman, where do they take me? They don't take me to Sandy Springs. They take me to the Rice Street Jail, which is downtown here in Atlanta. I was handcuffed, photographed, and if you're interested, everybody interested, I'll just tell you because, you know, the experience.
Go ahead, you guys, let's
do it. Well, it wasn't at the time.
Yeah,
I'm still sort of obsessed with to some. I'll mention this now before I forget. There's a website called Prison Talk Online, which I have followed because people whose loved ones are in jail, there's all kind of forums and sub-forums and everything like that. From like 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, where I finally was put in a cell, and fortunately in the medical wing because the doctor was nice. He said, people, you know, they got HIV, they got TB and everything else. I'm going to put you in a... So I was at least by myself. The people I was... Well, first they put you in this big room that's like bigger than this. It's like an auditorium. Has anybody else been through this? Been booked? Okay. All right. And eventually they call you. You go into the nurse. They ask you a bunch of questions. They do this and they do that. And, you know, I keep asking, you know, what could I do to get out of this? They said, the only way is if you get a judge to get you out. I'm racking my brains. Who do I know who's a judge? In the meantime, there's payphones that you can use. So I'm calling up, you know, probably all of you have the same experience. You got friends that are good for this. You got friends that are good for that. You know, I got one friend. I'm really like my brain's, what am I going to do? Call up this one friend, and I said, Stuart, I said, I need help. I want you to have a pen and paper. Just listen to me. Since I'm in jail, I don't have time to tell you all the details. This is what I want you to do. Call these people. Their daughter's a judge. Da, 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 da. If you don't hear me, by 6 o'clock, in any case, get me an attorney. Because they said I'll be seeing a judge tomorrow. And then we could make calls for a while, and then all of a sudden it stopped. So after they went through this one step, they talk to you, they try to decide, get enough information to decide what the bond will probably be. And this went on for a couple hours. Then they put us in very small rooms and a lot of people, 12, 15 people. And that's from what I've read in books or novels or movies. I don't know where I got it from. That's where I really started to be afraid. It turned out I shouldn't have been because I was at least 30 years older than the oldest person there. I was 68 at the time. All these people, you know, different socioeconomic class, different race, you know, I was as different from them as you could possibly be. Plus, I had a sport jacket on, you know. And they would, in most of these cells, there was no room to sit. There was, in these rooms, there maybe was room for four people to sit on a ledge, and the other people were sitting on the floor or trying to lie on the floor. I mean, you really packed in there, and they would get up and give me the seat, you know. I mean, they were just so nice to me. And the guards were nastier than crap. I mean, they were just nasty as can be. So this went on, and I don't do nothing well, okay? You don't know what's going on. You don't know what time it is. You have no idea. Maybe I should ask some of these guys, you know, what was going to happen. It was just awful. Besides, I was so tired. And they would just move us, and they would move some of us here, some of us there. It just went on and on and on and on. Until about 11 o'clock at night, I saw this doctor. He put me, by this time, you know, then you have to go and they take all your clothes, they take your money, can't, you know, put all that information in, give you prison clothes and a sheet, you know, a sheet and a towel and all this kind of stuff. It's really stupid because they know you're only going to be there. I mean, in retrospect, probably one night. And So I finally get in this cell. It was rather large. I guess it's because it was a medical cell. And I look around, and all there is, there's a ledge, a stainless steel ledge. It's got a lip this high, so you can't sit on it comfortably. And there's a mattress that's that high, all covered in plastic, that's cracked. Okay, the only other thing in the room is a toilet sink steel one piece, no seat, and that's it. Okay, so if you're given food, you can sit on the edge of the bed and put the bologna sandwich and whatever else, some crackers that they give you, and put it on there. Nothing tasted like, I don't know if the food was that bad or it was just out of fear I had. So the first thing I notice in this cell is an orange under the bed. And I'm terrified because I'm thinking, you know, what if there's something bad in this orange and, you know, I'm going to blame it on me and everything else. You know, I got the attention of one of the guards or something. I could not sleep at all. I maybe slept for a half hour. They kept saying, you'll be taken to the judge in the morning. You'll be taken to the, you know, 11 o'clock, whatever. But there was no way to know what time it was. Finally, in the morning, so by this time, in the packet of stuff, there was a book that's got all the rules. And I was afraid to read the rules, because I figured if I read the rules, I'm committing that this is where. But I finally read part of it, and if they don't charge you within 72 hours, they got to let you go. So I'm thinking, so then they start calling people to go to court, and they don't call me. They don't get me. So now I'm just, of course, later I realized what had happened. And I knock on the door. There was a button since it was a medical thing. And finally I got somebody to come. And I said, you know, they said that I would see there's a court inside the building, which is half the size of this room. And they said, well, I'm sorry. The guy did say, I'm sorry, your name's not on the list. And I was just, what am I going to do with myself the rest of the day? There's nothing to read. There's nothing to see. And you don't know what time it is. There's a window that's this big. It's up high. And it's got smoked glass in it. I guess so you can't signal to somebody. So you're really, finally, at like a half hour later, this guy comes and he says, grab your stuff. And took me down to the courtroom. Now, unknown to me, my friend had gotten in touch with these people whose daughter is a judge. She got a friend of hers who's a criminal attorney. When I walked in, as somebody started to walk towards me, and I said, did so-and-so send you? And she said, yes. I said, so this wasn't the end of it. The judge asked me a couple of questions. Gave the wrong answer. He said, you know, I said, I'm retired. So he said, well, you know, how do you spend your time? And I said, well, I travel and I read and everything. And because I didn't say that I do some volunteer work and stuff, I got a signature bond, which means it was a $15,000 signature bond, which means I didn't have to put up any money. I signed my name. But until this thing is resolved, I'm like on probation. So I got to do community service. Okay? And I'm on probation. So two things happen. She tells me, the attorney says, you'll be let out today. She says, that's the good news. The bad news is this could take anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. So it's like 11 in the morning. It didn't take 2 to 4 hours. It took till 10 o'clock at night, being moved around and around and around, re-fingerprinted, handcuffs, moved around here, moved around there, just going on and on and on and on and on. So two things happen. Finally, I'm saying, what am I going to do when I get out of here? I get two choices. I can call a cab. I mean, at this point, money's no object. You know, I don't care what it costs to get a cab to go home. But I don't really feel like driving home alone, you know? I just feel like calling my buddies and have somebody pick me up from this. Little did I know, two of my friends, have the one who found the attorney and got a letter. They've already found somebody at the jail who's nice, keeping them informed of where I am. they're there at the door. So when I finally break through, the two of them are there with a big smile on their face to get me. Now, my one friend is from New Jersey. I always say he's from New York, but he corrects me, New Jersey. He's a wise guy, and I'm pretty much a wise guy often, too. And this thing flashed in my mind. I said, you know, if I was him, I'd be making wise-ass remarks. And I looked at him, and I said, Phil, do not make any jokes. Okay? All right, I'll add a little bit more to it. First thing I do when I get home is I read these papers that I signed. It says I'm subject to random drug tests. I can't leave the county. I can't, or a Fort County area. I can't do this. I can't do that, you know. And I'm really paranoid. The thing that set it off, I got home. I was in pain from a leg that I eventually got a hip replacement about a month and a half later. I took a shower. I got in bed. The pain and everything else. I finally said, all right, I'm going to take, what is it, Percocet that I had prescribed for this. And sleep for 2 hours. I get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I go, because I remembered one of the things that said drug testing. And I've just taken a Percocet. So now I'm up for an hour and a half figuring, what am I going to do? Because I have to be at 8:30 in the morning. I have to be down at this probation office. So I took all of my medication. You know, nothing happened because of it. But you can imagine on top of this. And for 2 weeks, I was totally paranoid, and I still am to some degree. I used to have a knife that I bought in France on a trip, and I thought, oh, you know, you keep it in my glove compartment. You know, if you might be out somewhere, you can buy something, you know, a watermelon or something. It's out of my car. My registration's up to date. My driver's license up to date. You know, if I take liquor or something, which I don't usually do, it's in the trunk of my car. And I follow this prison talk online all the time, particularly the sub-legal forum. So my lesson to you is, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. And it's good, you know, it's good to know the name of an attorney and the phone number and have it on you, because that can happen. Any questions? Yes.
Did you ever get this straightened out as far as this?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get to the bottom of that?
Okay. Okay. I'll repeat the question.
Okay. Did you ever get that?
Yes, sir. Did you ever get that fraud charge or that fraud allegation they brought up on you straightened out, or get to the bottom of what caused it?
I didn't tell. Okay, when I went to court 2 weeks later, while I was waiting to be heard, my attorney went up, talked to the assistant district attorney, whatever, and she came back to me and said, I think it was they. Not they refused. They declined to prosecute. Okay, I was all fired up. I'm going to sue the bank. I'm going to do this. The reason I found Prison Talk, that ties into how I found Prison Talk Online. There was one guard, a woman, who was very nice to me. Late at night. It's not important. And I found this Prison Talk Online, and I posted to a forum that had to do with Georgia prisons. And I said, I want to thank the guard, but I don't want her to get in trouble. What do I do? There was an assistant DA from Fulton County who was, she, no longer posts, but she was telling people, in other words, she was helping the other side. She was just a good person and would answer questions. So she told me, you know, what to do and what not to do. And I told her, I'm all fired up, you know, my friends say I should sue the bank and everything like that. And she said, don't do it. I said, why? She said, you know, don't mess with a sleeping bear. She said, if you try to sue, the first thing that happens is the district attorney himself will want to. The district attorney himself, it will be brought to his attention that there's a lawsuit. He will look at it. You were not made innocent. You know, you were not declared innocent. They can bring it back up again. And somebody said from their standpoint, I mean, it's crazy, but, you know, they can claim, you know, that I was trying to take money out of this gal's account. It doesn't make any sense, because why would I use my ID, which was a legal ID for me, to try to drain her account? But you know what? I mean, when I was sitting there that night, you know, yes, I'm 100% sure I'm going to get out of jail, but there's other people in crazy circumstances who are 100% sure they're going to get out of jail and end up spending 20 years in jail. So I heard that, you know. And that's why, and when I look at this prison talk, I just wonder, how can somebody do armed robbery, go to jail for 5 years, come out of jail, and do another armed robbery? I just, it's like, you know, drugs I can understand. I mean, you're addicted and you got it to, but question, and I'll just repeat it. Who had a question? Oh, okay.
I mean, what could you have done differently in that situation? Like, if you had a lawyer and you called him, would you have avoided all of that, or do you know?
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking. If I hadn't gotten an attorney... Well, I wouldn't have gone through the fear factor of knowing. I mean, once there was a point when I was running around after I talked to my friend where they wouldn't let us use the phone anymore. Okay? Now, if he hadn't been home and I'd have to left a message, I would have really been in a black hole of what to do. I mean, I would have kept calling till I got different people, but I'd feel a lot better calling somebody or leaving a message and say, call AB. Tell them I'm at the Rice County Jail. Get me out of this. And that's the big thing to know, because if it happened to you, unless you don't want a name out of the phone book. I mean, you really don't.
Did you or anybody know if you were at the airport that you could have done?
At the airport?
Yeah.
No, because in that room they wouldn't even let me use the phones. There was nothing I could do there.
As far as I'm aware...
There was a warrant out for my arrest.
Yeah, they'll process you until you go to the police station and process you there, or the place of processing like that, then you won't be able to get a lawyer until after you're actually booked in.
Yeah, when I got home, there was a business card from Sandy Springs Police stuck in my car. So the door, they apparently... Yeah, that's why I was in the database. They apparently came to my house probably once or twice to try to serve me, and I'm told I was probably better off, because as bad as Rice Street is, which is under federal supervision for years now, I could have been in Doraville, which apparently is even worse, which I can't imagine. Okay. If anybody has any questions and wants to come forward. It happened, I think, in early 2009 or 2008. I can't remember. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to share an experience of mine. I was actually a police officer for several years at a department in a reserve program. And typically, the relevance of my topic is why you don't give information that's unnecessary. Otherwise, like, you know, your driver's license if you're driving. Because I was stopped during a traffic stop, and the officer noticed my badge, and he simply asked me, "Are you a police officer?" And I identified in the affirmative that I was. Well, in the process of it, he called my department, and it was a small department that I was a part of, like the kind where they literally close for 8 hours in the middle of the night. And when he called, there was an administrative assistant who was not familiar with our roster system, and she looked on the active duty roster and, in fact, said, "No, he is not a police officer." Well, they called back a second time to verify this, and she, you know, affirmed that, in fact, I was not, without knowing that you could flip on the back to look for the part-time and the inactive roster. Well, so I'm arrested for impersonating a police officer or a public employee is what it's called in Georgia, which is a felony. I was taken to the jail, and literally the whole time they're sitting there looking at my credentials, and you got this group of cops sitting around, and they're like, they're commenting on how authentic they look, because they've, you know, because we had recently complied with the new federal laws regarding licensing, like you may have experienced if you get a driver's license in Georgia now. Well, police had to deal with that about a year and a half ago. And our department had complied with this, and they're looking at these, and they're convinced. So at this point, you know, they ask if they can search my car, which I deny, but they get a warrant, because at the same time, there had been a police officer who was about, or a person who was impersonating a police officer who was about 5'10", white, middle-aged male, which I fit this description reasonably well, and who had actually raped a couple women. So in the course, they get a search warrant, which is part of this, and they search my house. And then the product of that is I worked for the firearms industry for the majority of my adult life. So I have about 50,000 rounds of ammunition coupled with, like, silencers and machine guns. So like they're sitting there looking at me and they're like, you're not going anywhere. They're like, you'd be lucky if this is all that you're charged with. Well, they called ATF. ATF came out there and ATF's like, yeah, it's all legal. So it was like, okay, they finally let me bond out. So you think, okay, well, I was like, well, all I need to do is, you know, try to talk to the officers and I can get my chief to call and in fact confirm. Well, my chief calls and they say, they listened to him and they said, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, then why did this employee identify that he was not? So essentially what it comes down to is when you say something that can be probable cause, reasonable suspicion, give them reason to charge you with something, they will believe what they are told. But unless they can cross-examine you in person, particularly to bring you to a court, what you have to say has no relevance if it can exonerate you. We even got a notarized letter signed by the chief and the senior patrolman who had hired me to, in fact, state that I was an officer, identify the entire situation. So it goes by about a year passes and nothing happens. You think, okay, well, maybe this is going to go away. No, they finally assign it to an ADA, and they actually bring me into court to formally arraign me. So you get there and they're like, guilty, not guilty. I actually had to go up nearly to the point of a trial. And this is the reason why they finally settled and they agreed to expunge my record and everything to remove it off my arrest record, which it never really goes away. So it may go off of your, you know, your NICS check. So when they do a background check, but if anybody does a public record search at the county where you were arrested, it will always be there. It never goes away. And there's nothing you can do about that. So they did not do it because of these letters. They didn't do it because of phone interviews with the chief or with the senior patrolman. They did it simply because I was a reserve officer in another state, and they didn't want to spend the money to domesticate the subpoena. And domesticating a subpoena would have cost them about $20,000 because they'd have to go to a court there to basically subpoena the law enforcement officer personnel from there, which would have been very expensive and time-consuming. So the take-home question for this is that I simply answered to what was a very true fact that I can prove to this day. And I spent a night in jail. I had to post a $15,000 bond because it was a felony. I spent, I think, $15,000 in lawyer fees by the time it was all finished dealing with this, because it's very serious. I mean, it's a felony and there's a lot that goes along with it. And at the end of the day, it took up a year and a half of my life almost for something that I was completely legitimate and honest about, where if I'd have simply said, I have no comment about it, the fact that you have a badge is not sufficient reason for them to arrest you for impersonating a police officer in Georgia. The fact that I said that I was a police officer was what it took for them to have, you know, probable cause to effectively arrest me for it. And, you know, a lot of people may think, okay, well, it ended good for you in the end. But to say, like, I work in the legal profession, so, like, when I wanted to register to take my bar exam, I have to explain this shit forever. It never goes away. And anytime you go to a job, because a lot of places do public record searches now, so you don't want to lie on the application, even though my record has been expunged, I didn't realize that basically it was still a matter of public record. The court case is still there, and it still says what you were charged for. And in a way, the fact that I didn't go to court, and which in a lot of ways I regret having not went to court to be found not guilty, because essentially it just shows the charge is there. Then you have to explain all the reasoning as to why it just appears to have stopped for no publicly disclosed reason. Do you have a question?
Because I've been noticed, like, in the U.S., like, there's three, like, main type of laws. There's, you know, common law, equity law, and admiralty law. And I was like, you know, we get, like, a speeding ticket, there's no injured party, so that scratches off common law. No contract is broken, so there's no equity law. So almost things like if magistrate court is, like, a business court, they're really under, like, maritime admiralty law. Because, I mean, you got the debtor versus the creditor, and there's, you know, you got, like, a money. So, really, what type of, because I was thinking, like for example, I have family members in the military. Now I was wondering, like, the gold fringe American flag, if that's a military flag, why is it in every courtroom in America?
Because they don't care. I'll just answer that right now.
Yeah.
I will answer it right now. I know where you're going with this, and as far as they are concerned, it's all patriot nonsense. Don't ever bring that up in court, or the first thing they'll do is label you as a wacko, and then they will put you in all the worst situations you can. Everything you're saying is true, and they don't care. Trust me, I know this from the inside out.
If you try like UCC uniform commercial,
they don't care.
In my experience, if you don't have, like I said, I work for law firms. If you don't have $20,000 to $50,000, you're not going to have a lot of success contesting anything in the legal system on a point of law. I know people have been accused of bribery, and after having the Supreme Court of the state of Georgia declare them, in fact, not guilty on a point of law two times and $1.5 million into it, the charge was still brought up a third time. So what happened to double jeopardy? So the second ruling by the Supreme Court of Georgia was actually saying this is, in fact, double jeopardy and you can't do it. But yet they found a way to extrapolate from it again and then do a third arrest. So it can be very expensive and difficult.
And hi, I'm Paul. I'm a former cop, too. And I will offer some enhancements. I will offer some enhancements on the video that you just saw. First off, it is a good video, and those people do some really good work. And those are the kinds of defenses that will save you. The Patriot Law defenses won't do it because they don't care. But let's go to the traffic stop. What you should do is, first off, build yourself a little kit that has your license, or not your license, you need to keep that on you, but has your proof of insurance and has your registration just right there in a little kit, and put it in a really quick, easy to get to place that is not your glove compartment. Because the second you open your glove compartment, if they see it and your door's unlocked, they can search it. All right. Now, there's a way around that too. When you do what he says, turn the lights on, but roll down the window this far, no more. And then you talk to him through the window. Because if there's anything that smells in the car and he can smell it, guess what? That's probable cause.
That's 1 inch, by the way, from when you're listening on the audio. It's 1 inch you indicated.
Yeah, about two.
1 to 2.
2 inches, call it 4 centimeters. And hand him this pack out the window, you know, and be just what he says, yes, sir, no, sir. And say as little as you possibly can, because as he said, every little scrap of data you give them, they will use against you. We are trained to do this, to try and trip you up little bits here and there. Okay. Hand him this. If he asks you to get out of the car, get out of the car, take your key and lock it. If you have one of the cool fobs that have the remote control built into it, you know, just walk out, hit the button. And if he says, well, why'd you lock your car? Sorry, habit. If the car's open, he can open the door. It's not a forced search because you left it unlocked. Well, if it's unlocked, anyone can walk in. Same thing with a house. If you walk out of the house, lock the door. Because then they have to ask for the key. And you say, well, no, I don't consent to searches. So if he asks you to step out of the car, fine. Take your key, lock the door. You know, hit the power lock button on the way out, or hit the key fob on the way out. Heaven help you if you've got manual locks, fine. Lock the door. And if he asks why, sorry, it's habit. I always lock my car when I get out. Don't ever let him search. And those are the little enhancements I added. Don't say anything. No, yes, no, answer the barest minimum you can. Don't give him anything more than you need to. Now, we're going to ask something first, and he's got a mic, so don't move until don't say anything until he does.
So if they ask you, where are you coming from, where are you going to, do you answer that, no?
That's back to what the guy on the video was saying. You have to decide what you want to be the outcome of this encounter. If you want to get it over with early, you can choose to give him this information. You don't have to. Realizing that everything you tell him may get used against you. And we are trained to trip you up. Any inconsistency whatsoever is enough reason to do almost anything he wants. And you got a guy all the way in the back. Well, you got someone up here too, but I think he was.
So if he notices you make like an effort to lock up your car when you get pulled over, and he questions you after habit, What do you do? Can he use that against
you? Question you in what way?
No, like, you lock your car after you get out, but, like, my truck has manual locks and manual windows, so if I manually roll everything up, close the back window, and lock both doors, and he notices that, would force of habit still apply, or...
Well, in that situation, no. I mean, that might be one of those sucks to be you things, but still, if you just lock the doors... Even if the window's open or not, you did still lock the door. That if he has to make you unlock the door, it's like the lawyer on the video said. It's one more step that he had to make you do. He had to reach in the window, unlock the door. In a house situation, that's still breaking and entering. Even if the window's open, if you have to unlock it to get in, that's still breaking and entering. And let me go back, with the glove compartment thing. If you have to reach into your glove compartment to pull it down to open it, anything he sees in the car, that's he can take action on. So if you've got a joint sitting on your back seat and he walks up, and no, you shouldn't be doing that anyway, but if he sees this joint sitting on your back seat, guess what? That's probable cause. You're getting your car opened up. If you've got something in the glove compartment, you're keeping a gun and knife in the glove compartment, you open it up, bang. He can see it. He can act on it. That's why, like, I've got a little compartment. I drive a jet. I've got a little compartment there I keep all that stuff in. You can clip it to your sun visor. That's what they used to make us do in driver's ed. But have some little pack so that you can keep that and only that in it. So that when he sees you go for it, there's no probable cause for that.
And as I walk down here, I'll note, when we did this panel last year, one of the key pieces of advice is that police officers will take any bit of information to convict you, but will never take it to exonerate you or defend you.
Exactly. They'll try and twist it.
I need to wrap up.
Okay. So he says two questions.
I actually had a kind of bad situation where I was pulled over for speeding. Guy asked me if I'd had anything to drink earlier in the night. You know, kind of standard question. It was like 1 in the morning. And I had. I'd had a beer 3.5 hours earlier. So I tell him that, and 20 minutes later, I'm breathalyzed, and I blew a .0, so it ended up fine for me. But I am not of age, so if I had blown anything above a .0, I would have been, DUI immediately, even though I wasn't impaired.
Although I think technically in Georgia, you blow up to a .02.
Well, I'm not from here, so this was in Michigan. But so, what's the best response to that? I have nothing to say on the matter.
Well, that's. The rule is always tell the truth.
Yeah.
But again, you have to look at what the outcome of the situation is going to be.
I plead the fifth be a valid response? Or
you can say that. I mean, the answer is just simply stand mute.
I can answer.
Just say no. If any cop ever asks you, have you been drinking? No, is the answer.
Yeah, you don't want to lie about it. I like his answer better. Just, I'm not going to answer. I'm being silent. I'm just going to say I'm being silent.
I don't think there's a charge for lying to a.
There is a charge for that. It's
called obstruction of justice. They're perjuring yourself as a crime. And in Georgia, at least, and I'm sure it is in most states.
Well, you're not under oath.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, trust me. Yeah.
If it's a state officer, there can be charges of obstruction of justice. If he turns out he's a federal officer, a lie to a federal officer is a felony. Every time. Doesn't matter what the subject is. If you lie, you're busted. Say nothing. No comment.
Okay, yeah, that's about right.
I have no comment.
You just say no comment, but then, a lot of officers have intimidation techniques. So I'm sorry. Someone else had a question. I don't want to
hurt them. All right, I'll go there with it. Go ahead and answer me. It's easier to say a lie. It's easy, but you could say no comment. But here's the thing you got to understand about all of this standing for your rights stuff. Every time you do this, you are taking a risk that you may be brought in. And you may be charged, and you may get the worst of all of the above. But if you do all of these things, if you follow your rights, if you stand hard on your rights, and you have to stand hard, you can't move. The instant you wiggle, they will eat you alive. If you stand hard on your rights, you stand a much better chance of surviving the situation unscathed than if you wiggle on anything. So you just have to decide, how hard do I feel today? And that is purely the answer to it.
I keep a legally sized knife in my car, and I know you said keep that packet out of your glove compartment, but I keep it in my glove compartment. And would it be better to warn him before I open up, officer? I have this in my car.
Okay, first off,
yeah.
Put your insurance and registration paperwork someplace other than there.
Yeah.
But if you are about to expose a weapon, mm-hmm. tell the officer that. Always, never, ever, ever surprise a cop. That's the fastest way to get tasered.
Okay.
Okay? Or worse. Never surprise a cop. Always just, you know, officer, I'm going to go for my registration is in the glove compartment. There is a weapon in there. It is a knife of this, you know, 3.5 inches, whatever is legal in your jurisdiction. That's what's there. I'm warning you before I do it. Do you still want me to reach in the glove compartment? They may say, you know what, open that door. I'm going to reach in there. And that's why I say keep the packet someplace else. Because then you're asking, as soon as you allow them to open that up, they can look in there. They're going to search around while they look for your registration. So you're opening yourself up again. So we're time.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean,
guys, I was just going to say, if you guys ever doubt as to why, I've had my own personal experience with cops that I prefer not to share, but if you guys ever doubt it, just look it up on YouTube. You can find plenty of videos of cops violating your rights. So if you ever, ever doubt, look at it.
They don't care about justice. They care about conviction rate.